This episode contains graphic details of murder and other crimes. Listener discretion is advised. Welcome back to Not Always Polite. I hope you guys have had a great week so far. Today I took the dogs to the dog beach. It was so nice here in southern Ontario today. I'm thinking this is probably going to be the last of the nice weather, so I wanted to make sure we got in one more beach day before the unthinkable, unspeakable, I can't even speak the name, anyways, of winter. I hope you guys get the TikTok reference. If not, that's fine. Anyways, I have another unsolved case for you guys today. I know y'all weirdos love the unsolved shit. So today I have an unsolved disappearance of a 19-year-old woman from Toronto. So without further ado, let's get on into it. Here's that clip I was talking about. I'm going to play it. I'm going to play the sound here so you guys know what I'm talking about.
I cannot even speak the name of the vampire that organized that monstrosity.
I don't give a fuck. His name was Mike.
Okay. On with the case. Today I'm going to be talking about Mabel Crumback. Mabel was born sometime in 1931, and as usual, little is known about her life prior to her disappearance. She was 19 years old, stood 5'1", and was described as a white female with dark hair and a fair complexion. She was last seen wearing a red and black plaid shirt, navy blue pleated skirt, and black suede pumps. She was not wearing a coat or a hat. Mabel was employed in the office of the Eastern Steel Company. She was religious and attended the St. John's Baptist Church. At church, she sang in the choir and was active in the church's social functions. During the 1950s, Mabel was living with her parents, Sheldon and Helen, and her brothers Gary and Bruce at 661 Willard Avenue in Toronto, Ontario. Around midnight on May 28th, Mabel's boyfriend Jim Bryan dropped her off at home after the pair went on a date. Jim says he came back for dinner the next day and Mabel was missing. That night, her parents were away at a wedding in Detroit, Michigan, and that night her brother Bruce was not home either. It doesn't say where he was, but it just says that he wasn't home at the time. Her 8-year-old brother Gary was home that night. I guess the 1950s were a different time, seeing as an 8-year-old was left home alone, but I guess that's not really relevant here because he's not the one that went missing. It was initially reported that Gary said he woke up sometime during the night and heard thumping on the floor and then the cellar stairs. He went back to sleep without investigating the noises. In later reports, he said he heard male voices and what he described as, quote, a dog fight. Gary said he woke up on Sunday morning to his sister missing. He then told the neighbors, who called the police. The neighbors reported hearing male voices and then a scream coming from the Crumback kitchen around 2 a.m. One neighbor reported seeing three strange men parked in a car in the neighborhood. A point to note about the house is that there were two entry doors, one that was facing Willard Avenue and one that was facing St. John Road. According to Mabel's mother, when they returned home later on May 28th, the Willard Avenue door was found unlocked, and the St. John Road door was also unlocked, but it was open. This was very unusual for her mother, as, quote, Mabel would never have been so careless. A search of Mabel's room revealed that she had taken a red and black plaid shirt, blue plaid skirt, and a pair of black suede shoes. Her pajama bottoms were folded neatly and placed under her pillow, and her pajama top was missing. Mabel's purse was left in her room, all the money was still inside, and her pocketbook was also left in her room. There was no sign of struggle in the home. So, I'm going to tell this next part, but it wasn't her. There were several possible sightings of her after her disappearance, but none have been confirmed. One involved a distressed young girl pleading for help to a tourist camp operator in Ancaster, Ontario on June 9th. This young girl said she was forced to go with the man she was with, but she did not want to go with him. The man was about 6 feet tall and had a cleft lip. However, this young girl had bleach blonde hair. Mabel had black hair. Her clothing didn't match what Mabel had taken with her, and the young girl also appeared to be drugged. The tourist camp operator ignored the girl's pleas for help, which is not cool, regardless of who she was, but he later went on to learn about Mabel's disappearance, and then he kind of put two and two together that Ancaster is only about half an hour from Toronto, and it's possible that someone had dyed her hair to conceal her identity. Like I said, I don't think that it was her. I think it was just someone else. Anyways, Mabel's parents eventually moved out of their home on Willard Avenue and settled in Guelph and then later in Wellington County. After their daughter disappeared, they couldn't stay in the home, which is fair. Her parents are both now deceased, and I couldn't find anywhere if her brothers were still alive. According to the Brantford Expositor, wow, that's a weird word, expositor, I've never seen that before. Anyways, according to that, in 2008, Mabel's brothers' families repeatedly rejected interview requests, saying, quote, they want to forget her, which is very shocking to me and makes me wonder what the family had to do with this. I know Gary was only 8, but maybe he was covering up for someone. Anyways, I'll get on into that in a second. But most families of missing people want to do as much as they can to help find their missing loved one. And it's maybe it just because it's been so long. I don't know. I just find that very strange. So, some theories behind the disappearance are as follows. Gary's versions of what happened are confusing, and he gave 2 or 3 different versions. So, in one version, he heard thumping on the floor and the cellar stairs. In the second version, he said he heard what he thought was a dog fight and male voices. Doe Network reports that he heard the dog barking, assuming that it's the family's dog. And Mabel's voice mixed with male's voices. So there's like 3 different versions. Now, Gary was only 8 at the time, so the first 2 are completely different stories, making his account not very reliable due to his age. Now, it's also unclear if he recognized any of the voices besides the 3rd statement where he says he heard Mabel's voice. But there could be different versions to cover up for someone he knew, like his parents or her boyfriend. Reports taken early on also state that a neighbor walked by and heard loud talking, but the neighbor thought her parents were reprimanding Mabel. If this is true, was it her parents? Did they not actually go to the wedding in Detroit? And I wonder what made the neighbor assume that it was Mabel who was getting in shit, not one of the brothers. Since there were no signs of struggle, it's likely that whoever took Mabel was known to her. They also could have known her parents were not going to be home that night. So we should also consider her boyfriend as a suspect. He was the last known person to see her because Gary, didn't say he saw her come home that night. The boyfriend dropped her off at midnight, and the neighbors heard male voices 2 hours later coming from inside the home. It was not known that Mabel had many male friends, so it's unlikely that it was someone other than her boyfriend. Is it just a coincidence that she disappears after Jim drops her off? I don't know. You guys let me know what you think. So Mabel's pajama top was missing, but her pajama pants were found neatly folded under her pillow. Some questions are, why would she leave the pants and take the top? And why would she have folded the pants and put them under her pillow? That's kind of strange. Maybe that's just something she did. I don't know. I've never done that, but anyways. So either she did it before she vanished, which is unlikely, or someone else did it. And if that's the case, then it's not likely a male, and especially not like a strange male. Females are typically more neat and clean, especially during crimes. So a male isn't going to care about folding clothes, especially if he's in the middle of kidnapping someone. So, like I said, Mabel was described as 5'1", white female with dark hair and a fair complexion, last seen wearing a red and black plaid shirt, navy blue pleated skirt, and black suede pumps. And she was 19 at the time. Okay, one more theory that I'm seeing in the comments of this blog called True Crime Diva. Someone named Kimberly says, quote, my gut about this screams unwed mother. Times were different back then. Young women were forced into homes for unwed mothers by their parents, and their child was taken away from them. But that's just my take on it. And then someone else commented that she agreed that it screams teen pregnancy. If she was pregnant, maybe her parents sent her away and disowned her. Maybe she told them and their outrage was so intense that they killed her. Or since her boyfriend is the only one who claims he took her home, maybe there was a back alley abortion gone wrong and the boyfriend dropping her off was a cover story. The family's attitude is really bizarre for a missing persons case. This is, of course, rampant speculation, which is very interesting. I never would have thought of that. So that's a very interesting take. What do you guys think? Let me know in the comments on Instagram. I would really like to know what you guys think. But that's all I have for you guys today. Don't forget to follow me on Instagram at NotAlwaysPolite and leave me a review wherever you're listening. It would really mean a lot to me. I hope you guys have a safe rest of your weekend and a good week, and I'll catch you guys next time. Bye.